It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, President Biden signed the Postal Service Reform Act last week. We'll find out what that new bill means for the post office and the future of your mail. First, when the U.S. Senate confirmed Ketanji Brown Jackson's nomination to become the next Supreme Court Justice, she became the first black woman to be confirmed for that position.
It has taken 232 years and 115 prior appointments for a black woman to be selected to serve on the Supreme Court of the United States. But we've made it.
That's the newly confirmed Justice Jackson speaking at the White House last week. She's also the first justice since Thurgood Marshall, another first, the first black person to ascend to the high court, to have experience as a public defender. We're going to talk about the public defender side of the story in just a bit. But first, what does Jackson's confirmation mean for black women in the legal profession here in Wisconsin? You can join in at 800-642-1234. What thoughts, what responses have you had to Justice Jackson's confirmation? What feelings has it brought up for you? If you work in the legal field or the criminal justice system, what thoughts do you have? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Amber Rafit August is president of the Wisconsin Association of African American Lawyers and an attorney with the Legal Aid Society of Milwaukee. Amber, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, part of your group's work includes encouraging more black people to enter the legal field. Can you talk first a bit about the gap you see in representation around Wisconsin?
So just generally, there just aren't a lot of, especially black women attorneys, black women judges. The current administration obviously has been making a push to diversify the bench through a lot of the new appointments, but it's still a very small group, not really visible. So the idea of having an associate justice of the Supreme Court in this newest justice is just, I was thinking about it and the feelings of just joy and excitement and talking with other black attorneys, especially black women attorneys that I interact with Wall and outside of Wall, everyone's just so excited about the representation, but there's still so much more that needs to happen in Wisconsin.
President Biden talked about representation last week at the White House, flanked by the newly confirmed Justice Jackson and Vice President Kamala Harris. Here's some of what he had to say.
Look, it's a powerful thing when people can see themselves in others. Think about that. What's the most powerful thing? I'll bet every one of you can go back and think of a time in your life where there was a teacher, a family member, a neighbor, somebody who made you believe that you could be whatever you wanted to be. It's a powerful, powerful, powerful notion. That's one of the reasons I believe so strongly that we needed a court that looks like America, not just the Supreme Court.
What do you think, Amber, about representation here? What does it mean now to have a woman entering the U.S. Supreme Court? Is that going to make a black woman on the U.S. Supreme Court? What does that mean for your efforts to maybe bring a new generation of lawyers into the field?
Well, Wall is always looking to encourage younger people. That's why we have the Vallandale Scholarship dinner every year, trying to encourage not only law students, so people already pursuing the legal career, but also talking at schools, talking to that next generation. I think it's super important to make it so that people can see themselves in other professionals. And I know growing up, I'm from the Milwaukee area, but I don't think I met another black judge until I was probably in college or law school. So making sure that those people who have already gone into roles that maybe these kids would be interested in are visible, are around, and are able to go into those positions of power is so important.
What do we lose in the legal field if we don't have, say, black women as attorneys, as judges?
I think that it's always really important to have a broad range of experiences and backgrounds, because I think that allows people to approach situations differently, which I think is really important, especially like in the judiciary, in those arenas. I also think it adds a layer of legitimacy to the courts. If people can go into court and see people who look like them making decisions that are important in their lives.
We're talking to Amber Rafit August, president of the Wisconsin Association of African American Lawyers, or WAAL, attorney with the Legal Aid Society of Milwaukee, talking about the confirmation of Judge, now Justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 if you have a reaction or a question for our guest. As President Biden mentioned, this is one judge, one justice on the Supreme Court. You mentioned there's a lot of work to do. What do you see as the next steps?
In terms of next steps, I think it's basically what's been happening, encouraging more diverse candidates to run for judges and other positions, encouraging more people who have diverse backgrounds, especially Black women or Black girls, to go into the law, to continue to diversify on that level. I think that until it is still, it's still not very representative of the population as a whole. We're still a very small but powerful group, but making sure that people understand that they can not necessarily get to the Supreme Court, but they have a role, they have a space in the legal field.
I've talked to a guest in the past about science and technology and the obstacles for women, where you go, you have this pipeline problem where at each step along the way, women are kind of filtered away from science and technology. Are there similar, pipeline problems like that for Black women getting into law? Where do you see some of the biggest roadblocks?
I think it starts really from the beginning. I think they're more less likely to have lawyers in your in their family, maybe. They're less likely to be exposed to the law at just an early age. It's not necessarily a career that they are told that they can get into. I don't think that it was even on the radar for me until high school, when a teacher randomly said, "You seem like someone who would be a good attorney." And the thought had not even crossed my mind in the slightest. So I think even from the beginning, there's those issues. And then there's also the issues of just societal issues, like lack of access to quality education, depending on the schooling systems, or an economic factor. Law school is extremely expensive, or even just women in general. By the time, you know, they maybe would be getting into these positions, maybe they're starting a family, or they're taking time off for a leave related to having children or other family pressures, I think, too, that limit their ascension into some of these roles.
What kind of things do you think your group and others could do to reach into schools to tell the next Amber, hey, maybe you could be a lawyer?
I think it's a lot of what we've been doing is partnering with different groups and schools. Like, for example, we do a costume drive for Halloween at the YMCA or the YWCA in Madison for the different housing programs for kids. Just the exposure of seeing those kids, for example, and they're little, seeing the Black professionals come in and give them like their Black Panther costume or their Minnie Mouse or things like that. So continuing to make those contacts. And what WAAL always finds is that there's always teachers, social workers, there's always people who want to reach out on the other end. So it's really about building those connections.
And the next step, somebody who's an attorney, maybe a Black woman who's an attorney, making that step to going into being a judge, seeing an open either appointment for an open seat or, as you were saying earlier, an open election. What kind of things can you do at that step of the pipeline?
So WAAL specifically has a judicial pipeline program where we do use our collection of the Black judges who are so gracious with their time and expertise to assist other WAAL members who might have questions and be interested. And also just generally, I've found that all of the diverse judges that we have in Wisconsin are usually pretty open about their journeys and assisting in terms of providing advice and other things. So I think it's really about, again, about those connections and making sure that those types of spaces exist for people who would be in like more diverse backgrounds to have access to those people who've done it before and have done it to the point where they've won elections. They're holding those seats that you might aspire to.
Let's bring on a caller. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi, Rob. So I have six kids. Five of them are multiracial. Of those five, four of them are girls. I just think it's fantastic. You know, the diversity that I'm able to actually, so I can say to my kids, you can be whatever you want to be in this world. And I actually have concrete examples that I can point to and say, see, it's, you know, not that they couldn't have broken the ceiling, but it's just nice to have that. You know, you have Obama's already been president. You have Kamala Harris as vice president. You know, you had Hillary Clinton running as the first female, you know, like major party candidate. And now this. I just think it's fantastic. And it also makes me think of the woman who's the head of the Wisconsin Army National Guard. She's the first female general. And she has a quote, which is, if you don't have a seat at the table, you might be on the menu.
Marcus, thanks for the call. Amber, as we wrap up, is that the message you're hoping parents and their children are picking up here?
Yes. I also am biracial. And as a child, if I had the examples that we have now, it would have meant so much to me. I mostly had like Scary Spice from the Spice Girls. So in terms of representation, it's such a step forward. And I'm so excited to show my own girls, like, here are the examples of what Black women are doing out here today.
Marcus, thanks for that call. And Amber, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Amber Rafit August, president of the Wisconsin Association of African American Lawyers. We talked to her about Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation to join the U.S. Supreme Court, what that means for Black women in the legal field here in the state. Coming up, we're going to talk about Jackson's experience as a public defender and how that fits her on the bench among her new colleagues. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you follow the confirmation hearings, especially the parts that talked about her background as a public defender? Do you think that is a valuable thing to have in your resume if you want to serve on the nation's highest court, or do you have concerns about it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about the confirmation of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to become the next justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. Now we're going to look at what it means to have a new justice on the court with experience as a public defender. You could join in with your thoughts or questions about that at 800-642-1234. Former public defenders on the U.S. Supreme Court, very few and far between. What do you think about that? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. John Gross is Clinical Associate Professor of Law at the University of Wisconsin Law School and Director of the Public Defender Project. He teaches criminal law, criminal defense, and trial practice. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. My pleasure to be here.
Now, public defenders are guaranteed for the accused by the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution. In this confirmation process, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's stint as a public defender got some criticism, some critical questions from Republicans in particular. What were your thoughts as that confirmation was going on?
Well, I thought it was really unfortunate that some of the Republican senators tried to exploit her past history as a public defender for political advantage, especially because those senators, particularly senators like Cruz and Hawley, they are actually lawyers. And they know very well that the Sixth Amendment requires representation. And they also know that legal ethics make it very clear that when a lawyer elects to represent someone, they are not endorsing that person's worldview or behavior or values. And so I think a good bit of that criticism was really unfair.
Now, I said few and far between former public defenders on the high court, very much so. And I think I saw a statistic, something like 1% of judges in the appellate court system, former public defenders, something like 8% in the entire system of federal judges. This is pretty rare. Why do we have so few former public defenders in these positions?
Yeah, the federal bench especially has a real prosecutorial government lawyer bias. It's at least 4-1. And part of the problem is historically, you know, being a prosecutor has been this path to being a judge, whether elected or appointed. It has been the practice for a very long time. And the current administration is really trying to push back a little bit on that. They're trying to appoint a more diverse bench, one that's more representative of not just different racial and ethnic groups, but also of different practice areas, people who've done different types of law, including criminal defense.
Why does it matter if there are public defenders in our court system and on the U.S. Supreme Court, for that matter?
Well, you know, when a lawyer represents the government, you know, their client is sort of an abstraction. They're representing the state, or if they're a corporate lawyer, they're representing a corporation. But public defenders, they represent real people. They represent poor people, and they have a window into the challenges and the struggles of folks who live in poverty and folks who live in places where there are high crime rates. And I actually thought, you know, there were comments about public defenders somehow siding with criminals. I have to say, it really is just the opposite. Public defenders have a front row seat to people who live in impoverished areas who are accused of crimes, but also victims of crime. So they are a very empathetic group. And I think empathy is a really critical thing to have when you're judging someone.
It does, especially if you are in an elected race for judge, it does give some easy campaign ad fodder, right? Because if you're a public defender, you will have defended guilty people at some point, and it's easy to bring that up. Is that part of the obstacle in our judge pipeline?
That is definitely part of the problem. And you see it not just with judicial appointments. You will see these type of attack ads when somebody runs for legislative office as well. And when they do happen, I hope people pay attention and notice that those attack ads are usually criticized quite harshly by state and local bar associations as being unfair. And in fact, you know, it is a real... It's very discouraging to see that somebody's work in public service as a public defender somehow is manipulated into a character flaw when they attempt to seek elected office or be appointed to the bench.
We're talking to John Gross from the University of Wisconsin Law School, director of the Public Defender Project, looking at the role of public defenders in our legal system. Supreme Court Justice just confirmed Ketanji Brown Jackson's background as a public defender for a while in her career. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jack is with us in Arena. Jack, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Jack?
Hey, I was talking about public defenders. I call it public pretenders. You know, I've lived my whole life. I'm in my 60s. I'm retired now. And I got caught up, but I had a little legal problem. What I realized, the only thing that public defenders do is make a deal with the DA to keep the charge from going to court. They rarely go out of their way to defend the accused people.
Jack, thanks for the call. John, I know that there's concern that public defenders are often spread thin. Jack says they don't want to have to take time in a courtroom. What do you think of what Jack had to bring up from his experience?
Well, I want to say it's certainly not the first time that I've heard someone express those opinions. I was a public defender myself for about 8 years. When I did a good job for clients, they often asked me when I was going to become a real lawyer. So there is that perception. I understand that. But in my experience, the public defenders who I've worked with and who I train are incredibly dedicated folks. You hit the nail on the head. The problem is one of resources and caseload. And public defenders are asked to represent a lot of folks and not always given the resources they need to do as good a job as they would like.
Thanks for the call, Jack. John, I remember at one point in the confirmation process, one senator mentioning saying something along the lines of, you know, if you would have represented these people as a public defender, well, you might have even represented Nazis in the Nuremberg trial. Now, the Nazis, I believe, did have a legal defense representation. That was part of the point, right?
Yes, that is a bit of the irony of that statement. I don't want to misattribute it to a particular senator, but I do recall it being made. The Supreme Court justice who left to oversee the Nuremberg trials did so because he very much wanted to ensure that anyone who was accused of these horrific crimes were given due process. And that included being given lawyers to represent them during these trials. So, you know, it's sort of disheartening to see this become something that United States senators will try to use to political advantage. This is a fundamental right tied to due process. And in fact, You know, when the Gideon decision was made, which granted people the right to counsel under the Sixth Amendment, the justice who wrote that decision said, you know, the right to counsel may not be deemed fundamental in some countries, but it is in ours. And so we're really talking about a fundamental American value that really everybody should be on board with.
And in our last minute or so, John, criminal cases are only one part of what the U.S. Supreme Court does. What do you think would be the impact of having somebody, again, with a few years of public defender experience might be when those cases do come to the U.S. Supreme Court?
I think that we've already seen a judge on the court, Justice Sotomayor, who practiced as a prosecutor in state-level criminal courts. And I think having a working knowledge of the criminal justice system, not what it says in the law books, not what it says in the statutes, but how it actually plays out on court, how police officers behave, how prosecutors actually behave, that's really critical for making decisions about whether or not somebody's constitutional rights have been violated. And so I think that perspective will just be invaluable to the other members of the court.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
That's John Gross, Clinical Associate Professor of Law at the University of Wisconsin Law School, Director of the Public Defender Project, talking about the newest U.S. Supreme Court justice just confirmed, Ketanji Brown Jackson, her background as a public defender and what that means for the court system and why judges with that kind of experience are few and far between.